And that's a problem. And I think that we are not seeing a shift.
You have Android. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. No, carry on. That's great.
That would be my CyanogenMod mod photo.
Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 90. My lab just got more expensive. Now what? Here we go. Today, my guest is Trevor Pott. How you doing, Trevor?
I'm not bad. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. I'm literally, after we get off this call, going to jump in a shower and then jump on a plane and fly to Australia. I've been really busy the last couple weeks and about to head pretty far away. So I know you're busy, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this topic here today. So before we get started, Trevor, could you take a quick moment and tell everybody about yourself, as much or as little information that you'd like to disclose about yourself, because I know you're a popular writer and stuff like that. But for those of the listeners who may not know you, introduce yourself.
Well, I guess popular writer is a bit of a... I'm searching for a term here. I'm going to go with it. It's a bit in the eye of the beholder. But yeah, I write for the Register. I write for Search VMware, a couple other places. And mostly I'm a small business systems administrator by trade from Canada. And yeah, I've gotten into tech marketing. I've gotten into a few other things. It's hard to pin down what I do, other than to say if it involves computers in some way, I'm probably got my nose into it.
I like to say, Trevor, that you stir the pot. Sorry, pardon the pun, but I love it. You stir the pot. I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, I have taken the Register's mantra to heart, and I am definitely an individual who bites the hand that feeds IT.
I love it. I love it. And I got to meet you at the Windows Server workshop preview, and I took notes.
I believe I asked some rather uncomfortable questions on a regular basis.
Exactly.
During
that. That's why I love it, because you're representing the little guy, the big guy, and hey, I appreciate that. You know, the community is a community. It's a full circle thing, right? The people that go with the flow and the people that ask the questions. So I took note of that, and that's why I invited you on the show. So
asking the uncomfortable questions is definitely my job.
Nice, nice. So Trevor, what we wanted to talk about today is kind of, I guess, our opinions and some considerations. And first of all, let's start with the facts related to, the TechNet subscription service is going to be discontinued. Personally, I use the TechNet service for my home lab. It's a great way for me to learn and therefore evangelize technologies. I'm really bummed about it, honestly. I found that was a great resource, and honestly, I used that as kind of my own little stir the pot when we were trying to talk about VMware offering the same type of thing, a VMTN subscription. And I even did a podcast on that topic when that came up about a year and a half ago or so. So basically, that's a fact. The TechNet subscription service is going to be discontinued. Either you go to an MSDN or you go the evaluation route. That's the fact. What do you think of all this?
Well, okay, this is pretty complicated. And there's a lot to hash out on this. The comment section on my article about this in the Register has really shown a lot of the different aspects that have come out of this. And certainly you are going to get different opinions depending on who you talk to. If you want the official word and the official viewpoint, go talk to Ed Bott and go read his stuff, and you are going to get the view from Redmond. And it's very, very different, and it's very disconnected from everybody else that I have talked to. And I think that this is really the problem. If you were to go back and you were to read the terms and conditions of TechNet through the years, the terms and conditions of TechNet have not really changed in verbiage all that much. But what has changed is Microsoft's interpretation of that and how they have positioned TechNet within the market to their customers. Now, this is really, really important because part of Microsoft's push in the killing of TechNet is to rewrite history. They are attempting to retcon the position of TechNet in that, you know, we were always at war with Oceania. In this case, TechNet was never for building a home lab. That is what Microsoft is now saying, and that is what Microsoft's mouthpieces are now saying. And this is the push that you are going to get, is that if you use TechNet for a home lab, if you use TechNet for basically any of the purposes that you were told it was for, you were a filthy pirate and you were taking advantage of Microsoft and you were taking food out of Steve Ballmer's mouth. And you should have been using an MSDN the whole time, and that's what you're going to get. But I think the reality on this is that that is never how Microsoft positioned TechNet for us. If you talk to a Microsoft value-added reseller, their licensing specialists, if you talk to Microsoft employees, Microsoft's own licensing specialists during audits, and so on and so forth, they have explicitly said to me and to dozens of others that I have talked to, yes, the purpose of TechNet is to build your test lab. Mm-hmm. And this is how most of us have used it. Some of us pirated. Some of us used it inappropriately. But I think most of us within the technology community used it to build a test lab. And I mean, even if you go and you start looking at some of the Internet Archive pages pointing to some of the Microsoft TechNet pages, you will see the usage scenarios under which the TechNet license is supposed to be used, and they explicitly state things like testing.
All right.
It is only recently that testing as a scenario has even moved into MSDN's licensing. Before that, MSDN was always, always, always pitched at, if you are a developer, you need this. And if you are a sysadmin, you need TechNet. Now, I think that the critical piece of this is that Microsoft doesn't need the hobbyist, and they don't need the power user, and they don't need the small business anymore. If you can't afford to rent your instances off of Azure,
right,
off of Office 365, and you can't afford volume licensing and MSDN and software assurance, Microsoft doesn't want you.
Well, okay. A couple of thoughts. I was actually going to take a different approach because I did see your piece on the Register. And I'll put links to that in the podcast notes, as well as Ed Bott's article as well, because there's a lot of discussion about it. And really, there should be. This is an important thing. I was almost in my mind taking a different approach, because maybe the reality is, maybe the system admin is dead. I need to be a developer or a cloud admin now. Think about it.
I agree. 100%. And I've been saying the same thing for about 2 years now. The systems administrator, especially the small business systems administrator, is dead. And we are well past that point. I have referred to what is left as cloud herders. Either you've gone the full DevOps route, which is where the enterprise admin is evolving. You've gone into management, got a CIO role, taking the CIO role away from the MBAs and giving it back to the technical people. You've exited IT altogether. Or you've gone the MSP route. I mean, I guess the other thing is you could just become a rack monkey or some really, really low-paid technician job, but very few of us are going to accept that. So the SME admin especially is becoming a managed service provider, whereas I used to run one network, now I will run 15 or 20 or 30. And I see this in my own experience, as well as mirrored across the experience of every other SME admin I talk to. Of course, that means where there once were 15 or 20 or 30 sysadmins, now there is one. And there's this massive contraction of the available jobs, which is not seeing this mass exodus of sysadmins from the market that would ideally happen. So instead, it's pushing our wages down, and at the same time, we are seeing companies like Microsoft say, hey, we're not getting as much money out of you guys as we want, so we're going to have to start taking away these programs. You know, the sysadmin is dying, but the interest and the hobbyist and the need to keep your fingers on the pulse of technology isn't going away.
Oh, I so agree with you there.
And this is why the TechNet death is so big.
What are you going to do? Are you going to get an MSDN account?
Well, I'm lucky in that Microsoft periodically pokes its nose out and says, hey, we should maybe be nice to that guy.
Oh, yeah, the re-education. Got it.
Yeah, and they they've given me an MSDN account, which is, by the way, this is going back to that re-messaging that Orwellian newspeak that Microsoft is engaged in here. I've been given TechNet accounts. You know, a TechNet account when I sign up or when I became an MCP, a TechNet account for various other reasons over the past. So first time they've given me an MSDN account.
Right.
So for me, I will probably always be able to keep my hand in technology, but that's due to my position as a blogger far more than it is as a sysadmin. If I weren't a blogger,
Exactly. But that's who you talk to in your material that you write with.
You sat in the same room as I did.
Oh, yeah.
As Microsoft explained the grand vision of their company, which was this cycle, this, as they called it, the virtuous cycle between Azure and server. And I think that this really fundamentally has to be understood to understand where Microsoft is going. They develop technologies for Azure and test them out there, and then they push them back into server. At the same time, they're developing technologies for server and pushing them back up into Azure. Their universe is hyperscale.
Right.
Everything about them, everything about what they're doing, everything about how they are putting their company together is about clouds and about scale. I mean, Steve Ballmer said he was all in on the cloud, and I don't think he understood how right he was at this.
Right.
And that's reflecting in everything they do. It's reflecting in all of their thinking. I mean, even the Xbox, you're always on. Well, that comes from thinking about clouds and integrating and how you're going to tie all this stuff together, because they're living in the echo chamber of Redmond.
Right. Well, you got to understand, I'm convinced that regardless of what the product cycle, right, that you just talked about where one feeds the other, I also think we're in a huge transition licensing-wise and how software companies make money-wise and how customers want to use stuff. But
I think Americans are in that transition.
Okay, fair. That's true.
And the rest of the world is looking at this and going, I have some heebie-jeebies about giving everything I own to American companies.
Yeah, that's true.
And as much as people like to portray me as paranoid because I raised this issue, I have gotten an unbelievable amount of feedback on those concerns. Far more so than I have anything I have ever written or talked about. I have had more people from around the world, more people from major media organizations, from governments, individual systems administrators, business leaders. They have all approached me about this topic. This is a real concern. And
well, I had that example with cloud storage. In fact, I had it was a Canadian matter that I was working on, and I was trying to talk to people about cloud storage, and I could ramble off, I don't know, 7-8 different countries that their cloud-based data would reside in, and because none of them were Canada, they said, well, we're out, can't do it. And I get that. You know, that was one small example, but
all of this cloud technology, all of this new stuff is American. There aren't that many providers out there that are from another country, and if they are, they almost by the economics of the situation have to store that data in the U.S. I think that we are not seeing a shift here from one digital economy to the other, in so much as we are seeing the birth of a digital divide. And it really is. It is. It's not so much the haves and the have-nots, so much as it is going to be the cloud believers and those who prefer to have some sort of control. And I don't think that schism is as difficult to understand as a lot of people make it out to be. I mean, everybody said that, oh, well, you couldn't fundamentally have two major players in the phone market, in the tablet market. It just wouldn't work. If you look at Microsoft, Microsoft became a monopoly, and you ultimately have to boil down to one player. That's not true. There are always more than one way to do things. Even mainframes aren't dead yet. And keeping control of your own data will be around for some time, but I think that is something that Microsoft's walking away from. As much as they pay lip service to the fact that they will keep these other technologies around, it is clear that the cloud is the first-class citizen and everything else is a secondary item.
Well, you brought up a lot of good points there, and whenever I talk to people about cloud as a categorical way of doing technology, I usually gravitate myself down to cloud storage and then secondly cloud compute. And in both of those situations, I say, look, if you're used to your on-premise data center practice, you have full management and control of that process. When you go these other routes, you might have half of one of those, okay? And you won't have the second. You will not have the control. You cannot walk in there and push the power button, you know, those types of things. There's a risk associated with that, and I get that.
Let me try to put this in a slightly different way. It might resonate a little bit more. Everybody loses data once. Everybody. Every single person out there.
Actually,
has a flash drive die.
For the record, I've never lost data, but carry on.
Everybody has a flash drive die, has a hard drive die, something. They lose data at least once. And this is especially common amongst non-techies. But it generally only happens the once, because when it does, it's devastating. It's a huge burden to the individual. It can be a massive financial impact to the company. But everybody loses data at least once. And I think we are at the point that we haven't run up against the negatives of the cloud yet. Everything being sold is on promise. We don't have enough experience face planting with this technology yet that we have become culturally leery of it in the same way that we have of, say, storage. We are positively paranoid about storage now.
Sure. Well, and I would clarify what you said to be small business and even enterprises looking to send workloads and storages to the cloud. I think if you talk about, there are plenty of services that are totally built around cloud that have evidence of success, but they also have evidence of outages. Dropbox, Netflix, et cetera, but
I'm not even thinking about outages. Although that is something of an issue, that's the issue that we engineered the cloud to deal with. That is why we built most of these technologies in the first place. It was resilience. It was data backup. It was all of that. So yeah, all of the problems of yesterday, well, not all, but many of the problems of yesterday, we built the cloud to solve, and it's great and it's wonderful. And I mean, it's some truly amazing what this technology can do. But there are some problems that we specifically chose to avoid. And in fact, we embraced with the cloud, and lock-in is probably the number one. That is probably going to be the bugbear that bites everybody.
So let's bring it back home, you know, back to the lab. I had thought about running my lab in a cloud, but honestly, I don't like the idea at all. Any compute instance hosted, not for me. First of all, I do most of my stuff around Hyper-V and vSphere, not necessarily in that order, and storage for that matter. And honestly, the cloud compute, cloud storage, not really a great place to learn about that. If I'm playing with apps, maybe. What are you going to do for your lab?
We can't live with this. We can't live with the constant ratcheting up of costs. We can't live with the uncertainty. And we can't live with being marginalized. And so Synology is actually a company that I'm turning to more and more because they offer this NAS appliance that it's Linux-based. It has its own app store. And for all intents and purposes, it can actually replace something like Small Business Server. Not necessarily like for like, there is work yet to be done. But I think that we're moving into a world of qualifying, identifying and qualifying appliances, physical and virtual appliances, to fulfill the rules that we once assigned to Windows. And I think that we are seeing, whereas we used to be a culture defined by the need to have the latest, greatest thing, and new technology was automatically better than that which went before, a lot of us have passed the point of good enough, where what's out there, the alternatives that are out there, they are just good enough. And so as I'm seeing demand for these from my customers, the requirement for a Microsoft lab is diminishing. I won't be maintaining a Microsoft infrastructure on a permanent basis the way I used to. I'll be using Samba 4. I will be using Synology. I'll be using all of these other tools. And yeah, I will be moving to Microsoft's use the evaluation version way of doing things because it will mostly be spinning them up to test them to show people you don't really need this anymore.
Ouch. But I believe it. I believe there is a shift. And as far as what is the right way, really, I don't know. I'm probably in my lab. I maintain two labs, probably. That probably isn't within TechNet's terms anyways. But anyways, I have two. One at home and then a little pocket at work. But all I do is really learn Microsoft stuff on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The VMware environment that I support, two of those, it's a little bit tougher, right? There's no real equivalent to a MSDN or TechNet for that matter.
No, and that's the tough one, is that with the loss of MSDN, we've actually lost the greatest tool we had in the battle to get the test lab setup that we actually wanted, which was VMware.
Well, you know what? The world is big enough for both. I really think Hyper-V and vSphere, Windows and the software, VMware software-defined data center, whatever. I think the world's big enough for both. I just want to know them both, okay?
Yes,
and
I agree.
And that's where I want to be, and everyone's needs are different, and I cannot just come in and say, you know, you must go that. I got to listen to what people want, and you're doing the same thing. You're listening to what your clients want.
But with Hyper-V, at least, Hyper-V is free, and Microsoft's entire universe is centered now around building these private clouds. So you can play with a lot of this stuff and get, you know, at least the basics of this under your belt without really having to go and worry about money. And you only have to worry about that when you want to start testing the applications, not the infrastructure.
Right.
And as I said, most of the applications that we're using are becoming virtual appliances rather than
traditional app models, right?
Exactly. And I mean, in a lot of cases, those are Linux. And I think that's actually recognized by Microsoft in the increasingly important role that Linux is playing within their ecosystem. But yeah, I mean, the harder part is getting that VMware infrastructure. So
yeah,
I think
this is boosting
the open source alternatives. This is boosting Cloud Stack. And this is going to boost Zen, ultimately, and Zen Server, with the new announcement that Zen Server is going back to open source.
Are you referring to OpenStack or CloudStack?
OpenStack.
Oh, open. You said CloudStack, but I think you meant OpenStack.
But CloudStack is another one of those ones to play with, too.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure of it.
There's really the three at the moment, OpenStack, CloudStack, and Zen Server.
See, I can't figure out Zen. I really can't because I'm just like, well, stick to VMware and Microsoft technologies. I'm not sure industry-wide what that's going to mean, but that's just my opinion. I don't know.
Well, I don't think anybody knows. And I mean, we could sit here and we could prognosticate, but the end result of this is that it is going, the uptake of these is going to boil down to the resources that Citrix and Rackspace choose to throw at it. But you have to realize that the existence of those companies is predicated on the success of those technologies. So I would not write them out. They are going to fight long and hard to make sure that we see them as relevant.
That's true. They should. And it's up to us, you and me, as bloggers, influencers, pundits, people that are supposed to be thought leaders, it's up to us to really know what's going on with all of them, at least at some level, much less hands-on. So,
that's why I replaced my Hyper-V cluster with KVM last night.
Yeah, I don't know. I might have to delete this podcast, Trevor. I don't know. Well, hey, Trevor, we are at the end of the allocated time. I do try to keep this podcast short and sweet. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me here today. I'm going to put links to your tweets and your recent posts, especially this particular one we talked about today. And you've got the Twitter that I use. Is that the Twitter you'd like me to put on there?
That one works fine.
Cake is _not_ali. The cake is not a lie. This gentleman's never short of an opinion, everyone. So if you want to engage with him on Twitter, he'll tell you the straight story. That's why I like him. So, Trevor, I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
All right. Yes, thank you very much for having me.